Devin, are you prepared for today's show? Because it's going to be a little bit different.
Ooh, different.
Yes.
Like, in what way?
So in honor of one of the...
Kinky?
No, not like that. Not like that. That's immediately a beep. Man, you're coming on strong today. So one of the things that I've been wanting to do with small box games is that I want to give it a shorter format. I want this to be our quickest podcast yet.
Okay, 100%.
In honor of a quick playing game.
I'm down with it.
Yeah? Are you ready? Okay. Three...
Before you start the small box thing, I just want to throw out that me and you should also do another one on Crimson Company at some point.
Ooh, they are actually really good, very compatible. By the way, I'm super disappointed that you did not just steal the intro from me.
Oh.
Like, what you should have done was like, hey, Jan, you know what we should do?
Wait. What intro are we talking about?
Welcome to Played It Once, a podcast about games we've only played once. The reality is that most board games only make it to the table one time, and first impressions matter. So we made a podcast about ours. I'm your host, Jan Bigas, and with me is the too slow Mr. Devin Norris. How you doing?
You should have had a longer pause between too slow and my name.
No, remember, we're going fast, man. We gotta cover today's game.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a juxtaposition if you want to go fast for small box games, but then you want, like, the joke name adjective about me to be too slow, then, like, it's a little bit of a whiplash here.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's like my Puerto Rican side is coming out again. I'm so sorry. So, for those of you who have not heard about Played It Once, this is a board game podcast where we delve deep into a single game, and we touch on three fundamental topics. An introduction to the featured game, the context in which we played, and our overall opinions of that experience. This week's game is going to be Air, Land, and Sea by Arcane Wonders. So, Devin, this is one that you actually recommended.
Well, specifically, it's by John Perry.
Ooh, wow, look at you coming up with all the info.
It's published by Arcane Wonders. Yeah, it's not like Google's and websites and tabs are open on my computer. Not at all.
I'm assuming that you memorize all these facts.
I have a mind like a steel trap.
Like a true professional would.
It was focused on the designer and all of the facts about this game and not at all trying to think the entire time while you were talking about ways to interrupt with stupid comments. So...
I've heard that about you. So, Devin... Since you recommended this game that we discussed this today, how about you give us an intro to what Air, Land, and Sea is?
Okay, so Air, Land, and Sea, if you didn't get it from Jan's excited and eager, rapid-paced introduction, is a small box game that we are going to try to cover fast. It is a military two-player war game that is played out with only 18 cards, and it is split amongst three different theaters of war, air, land, and sea, which hence the title. But what that does is it essentially forces you to have some level of hidden information, some level of common information, and it's first player out of the two to reach 12 victory points, which is similar to some particular games, but there's a massive mechanic in here, which we'll probably dig into later, that actually can make the game last longer and be a lot more strategic than just a simple play down.
And so basically, every time that it's your turn, you're going to have some choices. You're either going to play one of these cards face up into any of the three theaters, or you're going to play the card face down. The reason why you're doing that is that every single card has a particular effect that it's going to apply, and it can either be an instantaneous effect that happens immediately, or it could be something that applies to the entirety of your side of the board, or it could be something that changes things.
As opposed to an instantaneous ability that happens not immediately.
Exactly. Wow, Devin, thank you so much for the clarification. Very much appreciated.
No. I just wanted to get across that if anybody was thinking it was a different kind of instantaneous ability, it's not.
And the most important thing that you're trying to do, as Devin already explained, is that you're trying to get through a certain amount of victory points, trying to beat out the other side of the board. Whoever has the most victory, the most points on every theater will win that theater, and whoever has two of the three theaters is going to basically win that round. Here's when things get interesting, Devin, and that's what you were kind of alluding to, is that people can decide to withdraw, and withdrawing in this game and forfeiting a particular round is actually part of the strategy of how everything kind of goes down. But as Devin said, we'll get deeper into those mechanics a little bit later. So, Devin, talk to me a little bit more about the context. Like, when did you play this? How did you play it? How many times have you been able to play this so far? Like, what? How has been the experience with it?
So, this is the first time out of the two times, so, you know, statistically massive, that I've been on the show where I've actually followed the rules, and I have only played this game once.
What? So what you're saying is that neither of us are actually equipped to talk about this game.
Well, I'm confused. I feel like we must be equipped to some capacity. Otherwise, the conceit of this show makes no sense. If we follow the rules and then aren't able
Devin,
to talk
don't dig
about
deep.
It by following the rules, then either we should change or the rules should change. But yeah, so I played it just once. I played it on Tabletopia because until very recently, it's been unavailable. It's been out of stock, and it hasn't been able to be purchased from the Arcane Wonders website or anything like that. And so I played it on Tabletopia because it's free on there, and I was able to play it with my cousin who's out in California. And I only played it one time, and I've been wanting to play it for quite a while. So the opportunity to play it digitally kind of overwhelmed my preference to play it in person simply because I didn't have access to it, so I couldn't wait any longer, and I wanted to try it.
So I actually did play. So my context for this basically was I got taught this game. It is a super easy, smooth game to learn. There really isn't that much complexity in the way that you acquire the knowledge, but the way that it's implemented and the strategic depth that's inside will be apparent. Oh no, now I'm doing the sin of kind of revealing something. Easy to learn game. And I actually got taught this and played this with Jeremy Howard for the first time. We got on, I believe it was Tabletopia, and I did that, and the experience was super nice. You know, it's a simple card game, so the Tabletopia or the digital experience doesn't really hamper the gameplay itself too much. However, I will get into the result of that a little bit later. But yeah, overall, very easy to learn, easy to play, and that was it. So again, keeping true, that I think that has been the shortest contact conversation we ever had. So we're doing good, Devin. We're doing good.
Gotta keep moving.
Yeah, let's swing into the main topic, right? Which is talking about this game. And the first thing that I wanted to say here, and it's because I am actually a little bit excited about this. So Jeremy Howard talked this game up to me while we were playing. It was like a night of games that we did. We played like two or three titles, and he said like, oh no, before you go, if you have a few minutes, you need to try this. Like, I love this game. You need to try this game. And we went to play it, and we played like three rounds of the game, like three sessions of the game or two sessions of the game. And my response to playing that game was to immediately go.
Are you sure that you don't mean one session of the game?
No one heard that. My response to playing the game was to immediately go out and purchase a physical copy for myself.
That's pretty good. I mean, you definitely just answered the end of this podcast's question like a third of the way in, but...
Me? No, not at all. Maybe I bought it because I wanted to cover it on the channel and then just speak not very positively about it. You don't know.
Just use it for fire fuel when it gets cold in Maryland.
Yeah, exactly. People do that with, you know, yes, you're sort of right. I genuinely enjoyed Air, Land, and Sea. And what I really liked about it is that it is a very different take on the one-on-one area control card game systems that we've seen a few times. You know, you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast Crimson Company. The other one that I would mention is Omen. You know, there's a general tradition around these card games, and they're all looking to try and change things up in interesting ways while keeping the formula still simplistic enough so that you can pick it up at any time. But I feel that the way that Air, Land, and Sea did it has really shined for me. The way that the abilities work, and it's actually through that very perfect information deck. You know, you have 18 cards, and those 18 cards will be distributed equally amongst your players.
Not totally.
That's right.
Equal distribution. It's a third, and then a third. So it's actually not perfect information.
Ah, But there is a lot of information that you get, right? Like, the more that you start learning the deck and the strategies that you see your opponent take, you start memorizing those cards, and it gives you more to go on every time that you're trying to make those deductions or trying to figure out what's going on. But what I really liked about it overall was the way that those powers affected each other without being too overwhelming. For example, in games like Crimson Company or maybe even Omen, there were a lot of things that were being added to a very straightforward formula that I don't know if they were my favorite. I remember really enjoying Crimson Company. Omen, I enjoyed. But Air, Land, and Sea right now is currently my favorite. And it's simply that I like the merging of both being able to push forward and try to take those theaters, but also being able to retract yourself at any time gives it a lot of variance and dynamism.
So one thing that I want to speak to that you just talked about, if we're discussing the kind of game that Air, Land, and Sea is and what its peers in the genre of, you know, small box, lane, and area control games do, is specifically Crimson Company. Since I haven't played Omen, so I don't have experience with that, but you and I have both played Crimson Company. One of the things that I like a lot about that, now that it's, you know, it's on its third expansion and has continued to grow, is part of the beauty of that game is the variability of the cards. There are so many cards that the combinations of all of them is just sheer madness by the time you think about all of the ways that they can interact and how each game would be completely different based off of what cards you draw. So the magic or the spark or the draw or appeal of Crimson Company is, to me, that variability, which comes with increased number of components. You need more and more cards if you want more and more variability when it's designed the way that that is. What Air, Land, and Sea does so brilliantly is, because not all of the cards are typically even used in a round, and because you have abilities face up, but also face down function, you do more with less. And so you only need 18 cards, because you never know if a face down card was put there intentionally so that your opponent can then reveal it later, or if your opponent put it there intentionally as a trap for you to flip. And so there's a lot of nuance with so little cards.
Dude, and I think that the crux of all this is that Air, Land, and Sea makes you engage with the player that's sitting directly across from you more than these other titles. You're playing a mind game against each other. And I feel that conceit is so fascinating, because it's almost like what the game is trying to allude to, which is like these two army generals trying to come up with the best tactics possible to take down their opponent by being sneaky, by sending troops secretly over here, by doing that, by doing this. So I really like how there's almost this element of deduction within the system itself, but it's all mechanical. Like you said, like, you could play a card face down just to have another card two turns afterwards because you're planning ahead to flip it face up. And there's also the idea that your opponents can come in and change your strategy at any point. Man, for a two-player game, that's like, what? This is like $20, $15 sometimes?
Yeah, it's super cheap.
It is such an amazing little package. And honestly, like, if anybody's curious about what we've said so far, I would really, really implore you to go out and at least try and play this on Tabletopia. And if you can, jump on that next print run that I didn't even know it was completely out of stock so far. So that's awesome that it's coming back.
Yeah. No, it's been out for a while, because I've been trying to track it down digitally for several months, or maybe even half a year or something. So it's been out of stock for a while on Arcane's website, but it's back now. And I think that I would say that unfortunately, the good news is it's a small box game, so on Tabletopia it can play easily, but it is one of the types of games that mechanically it doesn't suit itself well to Tabletopia, because you have to do a bunch of card flipping, you have to do a bunch of card layering.
Good point.
If you're in person, that the game is going to play so fast and remarkably smooth. If you're on Tabletopia, especially if you're playing with someone who doesn't know how to use it, I mean, I had to essentially engineer the game for both me and my opponent, just because my family member wasn't familiar with the system. So it's clunky on there, but to just reinforce what Jan was saying, if you have the opportunity to play this physically or if you can be okay with doing it digitally, if your computer works well enough or you're familiar with Tabletopia or TTS in terms of that style of physics engine, please, yeah, go check it out. It's such a an easy add to a collection in a way that it's not cost prohibitive at all, and it's not going to take up hardly any space.
And the one thing that I would mention just before we close this off is that I talked about the idea of death in this game, right? And how much death is there actually in an 18 card game? Well, that ultimately comes down to the players, right? So I feel that Air, Land, and Sea is 100% the type of game that the more you play it, the better you will become at it, right?
Yeah.
So if you're jumping into it for the first time against a veteran, don't be surprised if you don't win the first couple of games, right? Like, it's the type of it's one of these types of games where the more information, the more knowledge of the cards that you have, the stronger you will be. But at the same time, I feel that there is a lot of games and a lot of sessions in this box, especially when you start playing different people that have experience with this title. Because I feel that a lot of times people always talk about like the time to money value of games, and for $15, heck, two games, three games is enough. But with Air, Land, and Sea, I genuinely believe that you have a ton of replay value here, regardless of those 18 cards. There's just a lot of things that you can do with it.
Yeah, and it felt like you were about to jump us off before we ever even talked about the withdrawal mechanic, but there are two specific things that I want to bring up, that being one of them. But the first one, going to what you said on depth, I think it goes back to that mental component and that deduction side of the game. Because, yes, if you have other small box games or even light to midweight games, a lot of times your longevity with it is based off of your own experience with it or your understanding of the mechanics and then you tiring out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the games that have the longest life are games where you have mechanics that are alluring or appealing to you or the people that you play with, but also have an unknown factor that's woven into it, which is how it plays with people and how that influences the experience. And because, like you said, if you play Air, Land, and Sea against two different people, you're going to have two completely different experiences because the way that they will approach the bluffing of what they play down or the tactical, you know, integration of cards that they place, the way they go about that will be different, which will make your enjoyment and experience and end result with Air, Land, and Sea different. And so the depth to me is there, not only because it's a clever game, but also because it relies on how it works with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's definitely going to give you, in my opinion, more value than maybe something else that didn't have that same kind of mind game component that you were talking about. And then the last thing I wanted to say was the withdrawal mechanic.
Ah, so good.
Which turns a like almost non-existent mechanic in most games into a highlight of this one. I mean, most games you don't want to concede a defeat at any point, and you know you'll claw your way to whatever, you know, dismal placing you can get yourself without ever saying that, you know, that you need to fall on your sword and just accept defeat.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, it is part of the strategy, and the smarter players or the more experienced players will know when the best time to withdraw is. Because for the people who haven't played this game yet, the way that it works is if you get all the way to the end of a round and everybody's played
by playing all your cards,
by playing all of your six cards, or if you happen to draw some from extra from the deck, if you expunge or expend all of your cards and the other player does the same, whoever wins two out of the three theaters wins 6 points.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot. Mm-hmm. That's half of what you need to win. So if you have two of those encounters and someone wins both of those, the game is over. But depending on what turn order you're in, however many cards you have left, if you choose to withdraw, grants or cedes a certain amount of smaller diminished points to whoever your whoever the opponent is, they will win fewer than 6 points. And sometimes, depending on what turn you go in, you can withdraw pretty quickly after just one or two cards, which only grants one or two points. So if there was a time in the game that I played where I played what was going to be a strong chain of events that was going to really crush if all of those went off in the correct order. And my opponent disrupted it in the first card, which turned a really strong combination of cards in my hand to a very ineffective one. And so after playing that first card and him responding, I withdrew because I was like, I likely cannot win now because he interrupted that. And so the freedom to acknowledge when you're going to do poorly, whether by the other player doing well or just by the cards that you get dealt that happen not to work well with each other, when you say, I'm going to leave and know that you get the benefit from that, that's a huge part of the game.
Man, it's those mental gymnastics that this little box is giving you that makes it worth everyone's time. And honestly, that I'm so happy that you did bring up the withdrawal mechanic because it is so neat. And it is something that you will 100% not utilize for your first few games, and you will be very sorry that you didn't. Because, as you said, Devin, we're like we're programmed now to just constantly be fighting and fighting and fighting and pushing and never letting go of the victory condition. But you have to do it here, or you're not going to have a good time. But with all that said, Devin, it's time for the main questions of the show. Did you, I think we both answered these already, but whatever. Did you enjoy it, and would you play it again?
Yes, I definitely enjoyed it. The nice thing about Air, Land, and Sea, just as an additional selling point for whoever wants to get it, is that because it's a two-player game, it is pandemic-friendly. So I do not have this game, but I plan on getting it and acquiring the physical copy as soon as I can. I have, you know, multiple different people that I'd be able to play with, and I think that it would get a lot of life, even in the limited gaming, you know, status that we're currently in the world. However, to more directly answer your radio announcer questions, yes, I enjoyed it, and yes, I would play it again. How about yourself?
I absolutely love Air, Land, and Sea. I was enamored with it the first time I played it. I can't wait to actually bring it to the actual table and just start showing this to everybody while we're waiting for games at the end of a game night after everyone's left and we're just like, we're tired, but we want to play something at the beginning of a game day to get our minds running. Air, Land, and Sea just fits all the perfect spaces that I need in order to play something where I am compelled and intrigued by, but without necessarily saturating my mental capacity for something that comes afterwards. I would 100% play Air, Land, and Sea with absolutely anybody that offers me an opportunity to sit down with this game. And I will be pushing this game just like Jeremy Howard did to me. It's like the gift that keeps on giving to anybody that gives me a chance to just play, put out these cards and see who's the best general among us. It's fantastic, really. Again, we really have to come up with some type of emblem or a stamp or a phrase, Devin, for when we approve games on the Played at Once podcast, because this one would definitely be getting it too.
Like the Golden Bill or something like that?
We already have the Golden Quack Award. That's reserved, okay, so for the channel.
It can't be golden. How about like the webbed foot wonder?
What about if we do something with quack?
Well, you just said that the golden quack was already won, so we can't do quack again.
No, but I mean like the sound. Like every time that we approve a game, you get a sound effect that goes like quack, quack, quack. Like this gets the quack.
No, we should not find a sound effect. We should just record, we should just take what you just did, and that needs to be it permanently.
Okay, well, if that's the case, Air, Land, and Sea, you're getting a quack from us.
This latest failed attempt at bringing you quality entertainment was brought to you by the Quackalope Podcast. We love to hear from you, so don't forget to leave a review and subscribe. If you'd like to connect with us, follow us on any of our social channels or visit our website. But regardless of what you do, remember to do the important thing. Get out and play some games. Until next time.